This is Bondi Tunes International, the week that was.
You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world, and we welcome our listeners on FM in Australia and New Zealand. Bob McKenzie is our Irish correspondent, and he joins me from south of Dublin, Bray, County Wicklow. I do believe, Bob, that it's 16 miles south of Dublin. Is that right?
Well, so they tell me.
Wouldn't you know?
You know, it has been known that I have walked back from the centre of the city back out to Bray on drunken Saturday night. So, Jesus. You know, I'd say that's about right.
You must have been.
I thought it was a bit longer, but you know.
You must have been sober by the time you got home.
Well, I was. You know, many's the time I've been there in a garage 5 miles out of Bray having a nice Mars bar and a Coke. You know, yourself.
As you do, yeah.
Just to keep you going at 3 a.m. when the kebab's worn off a bit, you know.
You know, Bob, something I might have forgotten or never knew, but you're a singer. You sing and play the guitar, don't you?
Well, I sing. I do sing, but mainly for my own amusement.
Do you ever do gigs or?
No. I've always wanted to do a gig as a stand-up. That would be on my bucket list. I'd love to do it for charity. I'd love to combine it with the full Monty.
Yes. You know,
you know yourself. Just for the crack.
Now,
just for the crack. You know what we're like. We're mad over here. So we do all sorts, you know.
It's fantastic. And talking of music, we will do a special on Bruce Springsteen sometime soon.
Listen, I'm still getting over the fact that Bruce flew from New York to go on stage with Paul McCartney at Glastonbury for 5 minutes. I'm still trying to process this.
I didn't know that. I didn't actually see any footage of Glastonbury.
Yeah,
was it good?
Basically, what happened was it was really bizarre, actually, Henry. Just as a quick aside about this,
sure.
Paul McCartney was headlining Glastonbury on Saturday night, and of course, Paul is now 80, and he was on anyway, and he was doing his thing, and then he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, I've got a special guest for you," and he brings on Dave Grohl. Now, I'm reading Dave Grohl's book at the moment, and I would recommend it to your listeners. It's a really good read. But, of course, Dave Grohl is a great man for hopping up on stage with other people and having the bit of fun. So, anyway, I thought, this is good. Dave Grohl's on. So I watched Dave Grohl, and then all of a sudden he said, and then Paul McCartney said, "And from the east coast of America, from New Jersey, it's Mr. Bruce Springsteen." And on walked Bruce Springsteen, and they did Glory Days. And then they did a track together. And then Bruce and Dave came on at the end for the encore. But what was hilarious was Dave Grohl looked like your really stoned uncle. He was wearing a cardigan, granny glasses, and a T-shirt that just said ABBA. That is so Dave Grohl.
I love that.
But Bruce, of course, is looking very, very well because, of course, Bruce is going on what we think may well be the final tour next year. He's already announced the dates in Europe. I know that he's going to be announcing the dates in the UK fairly shortly. And I know that he's definitely going to be touring Australia as well. Because, of course, Bruce loves you down there. Mm-hmm. And, of course, last time he was over, when he played Brisbane, he did that fantastic version of Staying Alive with a full classical orchestra, which was absolutely brilliant.
Oh,
so, you know,
great.
Bruce will be down to see you fairly shortly, my Antipodean friends. But I'm seeing him next year, 2 nights in Dublin, the night before my 58th birthday and the night after my 58th birthday. So I'm going to have a hell of a birthday next year, Henry.
Can I just ask you, did people know that Bruce Springsteen was going to appear on stage at Glastonbury?
No. It was funny because I was on Facebook at the time, and I was there saying to somebody, I'm reading Dave Grohl's book at the moment. It's really good. And then the next minute, somebody said, "Dave Grohl's now on stage with McCartney." So I turned it back over. I turned over to watch something else. So I turned it back over to watch Grohl. And then I said, I was going on about McCartney, and Noel Gallagher was on before him. And I made this snarky point, because I'm not a big fan of McCartney, and I made this snarky point that both Noel Gallagher and Paul McCartney were letting their old bands do a lot of the heavy lifting, you see. And then I put on, "Listen, lads, ye all know I'm waiting for Springsteen," meaning Bruce on tour. 2 minutes later, on walks Bruce Springsteen at Glastonbury.
That now, is brilliant.
I'm not saying I've got second sight
That's
or anything.
Brilliant.
But that was weird as hell.
That is fantastic. If you knew that, if you knew that Bruce Springsteen was going to be there, would you have maybe gone to Glastonbury?
Well, you can't get tickets for Glastonbury, Henry.
Oh.
Glastonbury sells out in about 10 seconds now.
Online,
yeah. I mean, I was last there in 1995, which somebody routinely informs me is about 30 years ago. Of course, when somebody says 30 years ago, I think the 70s. But, of course, they're talking about the 90s.
Yeah, that's awful.
You know yourself, yeah. Yeah, it's really weird because we're also seeing, at the moment, we're seeing this real disconnect, I think, in the music of the young and the music of our generation now. Like there was such a diversity at Glastonbury this weekend. Mm. People like Billie Eilish, who fantastic. A guy called Youngblood, who I'd never heard of before, who did an absolutely storming set. So you get to see all these bands that you've not seen before. I mean, Kendrick Lamar headlined last night. Kendrick Lamar, I know nothing about him. Apparently he's a rapper. He sells lots and lots of records. But last night, I just thought it was all too... He comes on and he does this set where he is wearing a crown of thorns that was handmade by Tiffany with 8,000 diamonds in it. Now, you know, this is rap excess to the nth degree for me. I mean, I like the classic rappers. You know yourself, your Public Enemy, your Dr. Dre. Mm. I love these guys.
Eminem.
I mean, I was absolutely scandalized recently. I went to see the Elvis movie, which is fantastic, by the way. Get down and see it. It's great. Tom Hanks, career-defining performance as Colonel Tom Parker. But on the soundtrack of it, there is this awful juxtaposition of Eminem rapping over Jailhouse Rock. And going on about me and the king in the pen, and I'm there like, lads, no.
No.
You know what I mean? Now, we love Baz Luhrmann, good Aussie and all that, makes great movies, but we don't want Eminem messing with Elvis, you know yourself.
Yeah, well, Glastonbury seems to have been a success. I have to ask, we should mention that it hasn't been on for 3 years, so no wonder the tickets are selling out fast. Did they have the usual slushy, rainy weather?
No, it was actually pretty good this year. They have this thing now on a Sunday afternoon where they get the legends out. So basically, we've had the Bee Gees headlining on the Sunday. We had Dolly headlining on the Sunday.
Dolly.
As well. We had Tom Jones. This year, it was Diana Ross. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately for Diana, she had terrible, terrible sound problems. She sang out of tune. It was very, very sad.
I saw you mention that on social media. Is this because of age or sickness or what?
And I mean, you and I would know about sound problems, you know, at gigs and stuff.
Yes, of course.
Because we're in the business and, you know, we can see when it's not the performer's fault. And I really, really felt for Diana because she is, you know, without a shadow of a doubt, she is the queen of R&B. And, you know, there is nobody, you know, with her back catalogue. You know, certainly not from her era, who's still around, you know? And it was just so sad because she's so wonderful, Diana Ross. She's such a diva. And the voice, you know, it isn't what it was. I mean, neither is McCartney's. I mean, I was surprised at how bad Paul McCartney's voice is now, but he's done now. That was probably the last time he will ever go on stage and do a full live gig, I think, because this was the end of his tour. And he's 80 years old, and I think he's probably had enough.
He did a super set. He seems very well, though, you know? He's very kind of up and doing stuff, you know? It's not like
but
he's...
It's like the great meme I saw last week, Henry, about, Oprah's Guide to Wellbeing. Mm-hmm. Number one, have $1 billion. that's basically what it is with the likes of Paul. They're so wealthy now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Elton John is in the same place. But Elton John's doing his 27th farewell tour at the moment. And, you know, a lot of these guys, the voices are gone, I have to say. Now, these are guys that you and I grew up listening to. Mm-hmm. You know, great, great legends like Rod Stewart, Elton John. You know, these guys, their voices are gone. And yet, Springsteen's voice isn't gone yet. He's 75 next year.
He's 75. I was going to ask what age he was. Yeah,
as good as ever. You know.
Mm, mm. I just want to mention something since we're talking about music. And by the way, if you've just joined us, I'm Henry on Bondi Tunes International on Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia. And I'm joined by our Irish correspondent, Bob McKenzie, who's not in Dublin. He's actually in Bray. I was going to say, a friend of mine in Liverpool, England, went to see Elton John in concert, and he wasn't happy. I mean, he said that Elton didn't get off the stool playing the piano. I don't know why he should have, but anyway, he didn't. And that he played a lot of new material as against the oldies that everyone knows. What's your view? Because I did ask someone about this last week on this show, but I want to get your views because you're very much into music, Bob. And do you think that these singers, who, you know, legendary singers like Elton John, should balance it out a little bit? Because, I mean, you know, Elton played Yellow Brick Road right at the end. I don't know if he played any other old songs, but what do you think?
Well, I mean, as regards Elton, it's an interesting one because, of course, Elton's voice, as we were just saying there, is gone. But I mean, as you know, I have seen Springsteen over 50 times, and Springsteen is one of those artists that you're referring to who has a massive, massive back catalogue, which has some of the greatest songs written by any American songwriter through the 70s, 80s and 90s. And Bruce tends to... He will never do the same show twice. I've seen him three successive nights, and it's been three completely different shows. Mm. Because he has such a great catalogue. He moves it around a lot. He'll do new stuff. He might even throw in some of his solo stuff with the band, or he might let the band go off and do a bit of solo stuff. But he's always constantly mixing it up. Whereas I think that what Elton's doing is that he has a set list, and he does that. He'll do Crocodile Rock. He'll do Saturday Nights, Friday Night's All Right for Fighting. He'll do Candle in the Wind, which Bob Geldof famously came out with one of the great quips about Elton when he released Candle in the Wind for Princess Diana, which is still the biggest selling single of all time anywhere.
Right? Does that beat the Christmas song for Alive?
It beats the Band-Aid song because, of course, huge outpouring of grief in the UK over the death of Diana. Mm. And when he did that song for Princess Diana, Bob Geldof turned around and famously said, "Now it's a song for two dead blondes," which I thought was both very, very funny and very, very cruel. Elton isn't what he was. I think that's fair to say. But neither's Rod Stewart as well. Rod's also been...
I saw him being interviewed, actually. He's a funny man.
Rod's great being interviewed, but just don't listen to him sing anymore. I mean, I love Rod Stewart. I mean, did you know that Rod Stewart is a mad model railway enthusiast? Did you know that?
I did not know that, no.
Yeah, he has a railway that he has built over the years that is a facsimile of Chicago and New York with the old trains, etc. But he used to bring the stuff on tour with him, and in his downtime, he'd be building railway tracks.
I thought his...
That's very bizarre.
I thought his only hobby was women.
Well, there are two things about Rod. Rod and the women, obviously. And then the other one is the fact that he's very proud of the fact that both him and the Queen have had the same hairdo for 60 years.
Yes. Well, you know, we were talking about Elton, in Liverpool a couple of weeks ago.
The thing about it is, Henry, right? Sorry? People will buy these tickets for the memories, won't they? Like, they'll be there like, you know, this is the final time we're going to go and see this person. They're going to play the hits. Now, sometimes you're going to be disappointed because they won't play all the hits. Mm. You know, like, you'll go and you'll hope that, you know, Bruce or whoever's going to do a certain song for you, and it doesn't happen. And then next time, when you're not expecting it, it does happen. So you don't really know. But, I mean, I think that legacy acts, if you like, if we want to call them that, I think that they do have... I don't know what the very word is, but, you know, I think that they should play the hits that people know and love, but I'm also all for them playing new stuff. I mean, McCartney alluded to it on stage on Saturday night. He said, look, I'm giving you a few of the old hits, but I'm giving you some new stuff as well.
Yeah.
Now, you're going back for the hits, but you don't care about the new stuff, but we're going to do it anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, McCartney doesn't care, but McCartney is McCartney, isn't he?
Yeah.
But I mean, for instance, now, one thing that I didn't like, and I saw that he'd been doing this on tour, he mentioned George and did a thing for George Harrison.
Mm.
He didn't mention Ringo at all, which I thought was bizarre, and I actually thought he might have brought Ringo on at some stage.
Mm.
But he did this duet with John on video, which I found very, very creepy. Other people were saying, oh, it was a real moment of the gig. For me, I just find that, you know, he's sort of like piggybacking on a dead man here.
So just, let me get this right. He was on stage in Glastonbury, and he had and he had behind him a big screen, and he was singing along to
with John. Him and John did a duet on a song.
Yeah, I can see that as creepy.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, what happened was Peter Jackson, who you know, the great New Zealand film director, who's most famous probably for the Lord of the Rings rubbish.
Yes, I agree. I concur.
Oh, stop. I read the books when I was eight, Henry, and they were great books, but the movie's dreadful. Mm. So he recently did a well-regarded series about the Beatles called Get Back, where he took all the footage from when they were doing that album and made it into a series that I think was on Disney Plus in the end. I mean, I'm still getting over the fact that Danny Boyle has made a drama about the Sex Pistols and it's been funded by Disney. And I won't be going anywhere near it. I was there when it happened. Yeah. I don't need the drama. You know that way, Henry. I was there when it all happened. 1976.
Yeah.
I was there. You know, I don't need it. But basically, Peter Jackson managed to isolate some of John's vocals. And he said to Paul, you could use this in a gig. So Paul did. But it was there like, you know, Ask Great, me and John are back together. No, you're not back together. John Lennon has been dead since December the 8th, 1980, mate.
Mm.
And you've piggybacked on him for years. Now stop it.
Yes, you know what I mean? Yes, I hear you.
I mean, I'm not a huge fan of McCartney. Like, my favourite Beatle by a mile is George Harrison.
Really?
Because absolutely, by an absolute country mile.
So you would put him in front of John Lennon, yep?
I would, and I'll tell you why I put him in front of John Lennon.
Mm.
Because his solo career was better than any of the other Beatles, and also, don't forget, he was also a travelling Wilbury. Which, you know, they're the greatest supergroup of all time, bar none. Never played live, released two albums, but, you know, one of the great bands of all time. And in fact, I saw a very, very funny quote there over the weekend that really did make me laugh. And it was allegedly Tom Petty, Bob Dylan and George Harrison are sat working on a song and George gets up to go to the restroom, shall we say. And Bob Dylan leans over to Tom Petty and he says, in all seriousness, you know he was in the Beatles, right? You know what I mean? Well, that's just Bob Dylan and Tom Petty, you know?
That's lovely stuff.
But, you know, I mean, George was very, very creative. I mean, also, outside of his music, he is responsible for the life of Brian. And for that, we should forever be grateful because, of course, he funded...
How is
he funded that movie.
Is that right? I did not know that.
Oh, did you not know that?
No.
Oh, God, yeah. Handmade Films is George Harrison, yeah.
Wow.
He funded the Monty Python movies, yeah.
Well, Bob, what did you think of the early Beatles movies? A Hard Day's Night was one of them. What did you think of those movies? Did you see them?
Yeah. I mean, they're fun. I mean, it's like I went to see the Elvis movie there, and I mean, it reminded me of Elvis's movies. And I mean, obviously, I've seen all of those over the years as well. Mm. I mean, for me, the highlight of the early Beatles movies is actually Wilfred Brimmel, who many of you will know from Steptoe and Son.
Yes.
He's in one of them and does a great Al turn in it. But, you know, they were ahead of their time, the Beatles, in so many ways. They saw the potential of the marketing thing as well, don't forget, with the little dolls and stuff.
Mm.
And the Beatles were very much ahead of the curve that way.
Well, that marketing was way ahead of the curve.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, the Stones never did really merchandising like that. The Stones always made their money in T-shirts because, of course, their logo is so iconic.
Yeah.
They've always made their money that way, whereas the Beatles had a whole range of merchandises that ranged from wigs to dolls. And they made an absolute fortune out of it. And fair play to them. And musically, of course, very much ahead of the curve with some of the stuff that they did over the years. I mean, they are one of the great bands. Are they the greatest band of all time? I think that's over to interpretation. Yes, they sold more records than any other band, but if you're going to have the whole Beatles-Stones debate, you have to turn around and say that in terms of historically and in terms of what they have given to the world, the Stones are the greater group because they have toured consistently for 60 years and are still producing 2.5, 3-hour shows where that are full of energy and joy. I mean, I couldn't get over. I saw the Stones last time about 15 years ago, and they were in their late 60s then. And Jagger, even now, his energy levels are so fantastic, even now. And I mean, they as a live act, they're right up there. They're up there with Springsteen. They're up there with Neil Young. They're up there with the very, very great live act. So when you look at it, for me, maybe culturally, the Stones mean more to me than the Beatles do.
iTunes International, virus-free. around the world and down your street.
I just want to, as an aside note to what we're talking about with Elton John's concert a couple of weeks ago in Liverpool, England, Rod Stewart was interviewed recently, and he was asked, in America actually, and he was asked about new songs and old songs when he does his concerts. And he says, mate, I just play the old songs. Isn't that interesting? I don't know if he's making any new songs, but he just said, that's what they come to see. And I sort of see his point, you know what I mean?
Well, he did the as you know, the Queen of England, Queen Elizabeth, was a Jubilee
show. Yes.
And they had this mental gig outside the palace, which began with Her Majesty in the staterooms having a cup of tea and a marmalade sandwich with Paddington Bear.
Yes.
And then Her Majesty tapped on the teacup, the start of We Will Rock You, and then suddenly Brian May appears on a loudspeaker rocking out to We Will Rock You. Of course, Queen are still touring with this guy, Adam Lambert, as the front man. He's a guy who I think won American Idol, maybe.
Is he good?
Personally, the word that I would use starts with S, ends in T, and it's got an H-I in the middle.
Okay.
I don't like him. But then again, I don't agree with this thing of, you know, keeping bands going when, you know, key members, i.e. the lead singer, have croaked it. So I don't
agree. Yeah,
really,
I agree. I agree.
Like the Eagles were on in Dublin on Friday night.
Oh.
And people were going mad about us, the Eagles. You know, the Eagles are massively overrated as a band, you know?
Mm.
Didn't speak to each other for 20 years.
But it is it is nostalgic stuff. I mean, people of our age, it's all about nostalgia, isn't it? I mean, you know, I wasn't a fan of 80s music back in the 80s when I was stuck in a newsroom in Radio Nova in Dublin because they piped the music in and played the same friggin' songs all day. But now I like the music from the 80s because it reminds me of Nova, you know, it reminds me of my youth.
Now, of course, we've had that very interesting juxtaposition of this in the last 2 weeks with the whole Kate Bush thing, where Kate Bush has seen a song of hers that she released 37 years ago finally go to number one because it's in a show that the kids watch. And kids are saying to their parents, oh, this Kate Bush track's really good. Have you ever heard of Kate Bush?
It's the same with ABBA. Now, you know?
I am somebody who, as you know, grew up in England in the 70s and early 80s.
Yes.
And I remember going to see Kate Bush in pubs.
Wow.
That's how far I go back with Kate Bush. So Kate's from my neck of the woods as well. She's a Kent girl. So I know Kate Bush from back in the day, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And, of course, she famously is quite reclusive. She's hardly performed live. A couple of years ago, she did shows in London just before the pandemic. It sold out before they even went on sale. She's that popular. But she is now finally getting her due that she should have got 20-odd years ago, because Kate is an absolute trailblazer for women in music. She always had creative control over all her work.
Yes.
Wuthering Heights, of course, is the one that everybody remembers. But now running up that hill is really, you know, resonating with the young people. Now, running up that hill was part of the Olympics in London, the opening show that Danny Boyle did.
Yes.
He used Kate Bush's Running Up That Hill to, you know, to allude to the challenges that would face the athletes over the following 3 weeks. So, you know, there's all sorts of ways that you can interpret Kate's music, but what you cannot argue about is that the woman is a bona fide legend, whatever way you want to look at it. I mean, I remember listening to her debut album, The Kick Inside, in 77, maybe, and thinking, wow, this girl really is taking it to the boundaries in what she's doing vocally, what she's doing musically, what she's doing lyrically, and you can sing along to it. Do you know what I mean? And that's always very important, that you can sing along to it or you can hum along to it. And I'm so happy for Kate. And she did an interview with BBC Radio 4 where she said it's bonkers and, you know, it's brilliant for me. But, you know, it's great these young kids are listening to my music. And, you know, it's great to see a proper icon like Kate Bush. I mean, there's a woman that if Michael Evers or Emily Evers could persuade Kate Bush to do the legend slot at Glastonbury on the Sunday afternoon, you'd have the biggest crowd of all time, I think.
Yes, and the thing is, I was a big fan of Kate Bush myself back in 90. And just to let our listeners know, if you don't know, her first big hit was Wuthering Heights in 1978, and she followed that up in 1979 with The Man with the Child in His Eyes, which is actually my favourite song from Kate Bush. And as you say, she's a prolific songwriter, singer and dancer. I mean, she really changed... she really pushed the bar with how you perform as a woman, particularly. And I just think that's fantastic. I mean, she just blew me away from day one. The minute, you know, I heard about her in 1978, and Wuthering Heights was such a great song. If you've just joined us, I'm talking with Bob McKenzie here at Bondi Tunes International. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia. Bob's in Bray, near Dublin. Bob, just before we switch, I'm sorry, do you have some more time to talk?
I do, of course, yeah.
Okay. I want to talk about Slane Castle. Now, when I was a lad living in Dublin, I once went to Slane. I can't even remember what I saw. Have you been there? Is it still going?
Oh, I've been to Slane many.
I bet you have.
My friend. One of the great day outs in Irish culture, I think it's fair to say. I have not seen Springsteen there, however, because the year that Springsteen played in 1985, I saw him all three nights that he played at Wembley the week before Live Aid.
Really?
So that was before I moved over here from England. Now, I have seen the Red Hot Chili Peppers at Slane. They were awful.
Oh, really?
Robbie Williams I've seen twice, once as the undercard and once as the headliner. Neil Young, with Booker T and the MGs, which was tremendous. Oasis I saw there. REM. So I've been a few times, I think it's fair to say, Henry. And it's a great venue. It is a great, great venue. And it's a wonderful day. Oh, and of course, the Rolling Stones in 2006. And that day, actually, was the worst weather for any concert I was ever at. And the Stones were absolutely unbelievably good. So the rain didn't matter that day. And I also ended up being 5 feet from Jagger, which was absolutely phenomenal. Basically, they had a thing with the stage, and he was on like this arm of the stage, and he was over the far side, and then it swung round, and suddenly he's like 5 feet away from me, and they're like, "Spit on me, Mick. You know yourself." yeah, absolutely fantastic. And it's a great venue. It's in County Meath, as you know, just outside Dublin. It's about 40 minutes outside Dublin. They run buses to it from all the various parts of Ireland. It's not been on for a few years. There was a big rumour...
COVID?
...that they're going to do it this year, and it was going to be Springsteen. But, of course, Bruce has now announced his gigs for Europe, and he's actually playing the RDS, which is his old stomping ground. That's the venue that Springsteen has played most... in Ireland. He's played a good few venues, as you know, in Ireland, including a few years ago when he did a mini Irish tour, which was great, where he played Kilkenny, Limerick, Cork and Belfast, and didn't play Dublin at all. So, you know, he was the big rumour this year for Slane, but they decided not to put it on this year. So we're hoping that it will be back next year and that we'll have a great headliner for next year. But we'll have to wait. But it is one of the is Ireland's Glastonbury. I think it's fair to say.
Yes, yes.
Now that we don't have failure, you know. I mean, you remember the trip to Tip back in the late 90s. That was the big one, of course. 3 days of carnage down in Thurles in Tipperary in a GAA stadium. Some people never came back from it. You know yourself,
really?
It was one of those, but. Yeah, Slane will be back, I think, next year, hopefully.
But can we blame COVID for this, or are there financial problems with Slane?
I think Lord Henry, who is the man who owns Slane now, he's knocking on a bit now, and his kids are doing various things with the estate. I mean, I stayed in a yurt on the estate a few years ago. One of his daughters is running a nice sort of glamping thing in a couple of the fields there, which is a very, very pleasant experience. You know, hot tub outside, you know, nice barbecue kitchen, You sleep in a big tent that's like a hotel room.
I Everyone's love it.
So, you know, that's probably where he's diversifying now. Mm. But I do think that you will have a situation like you've got with Glastonbury, where Michael Eavis, of course, is the man who started Glastonbury, and now it's his daughter who is the power behind it, which is why you're seeing such a diversity, I think, of acts again at Glastonbury. I mean, a couple of years ago, before the pandemic, the last Glastonbury, Stormzy headlined. And I mean, that was a big, big thing because he is a British artist of a certain type. He's a grime artist, which is a genre of black music which really isn't mainstream outside of a certain constituents, I think it's fair to say. Mm. But Stormzy is one of those who I think transcends the genre that he's in because he has this superstar presence. And I think that was a big marker for them to say, you know, we will put you on if you're good enough to headline our stage. And Stormzy did a fantastic, absolutely fantastic set, complete with a stab vest designed by Banksy, which I thought was a lovely touch as well, making the point about knife crime in, you know, his community and in communities around the world, of course, particularly black communities, a lot of knife crime. So, you know, he was making the statement with that. And, you know, I do like to see that when you see musicians making political statements, making, you know, statements about the state of humanity. I mean, I'm not talking about rock stars that mouth off and talk nonsense like Bono, who talks absolutely nonsense.
I want to just ask you about Bono because, look, I met Bono in 1979 in a roller skating ring in Dunleary, where I'm from, south of Dublin. And I was doing 9 till 12:30 as a DJ. You may know it, it's just out of Dunleary. And I was doing a DJ kind of thing between 9 and 12:30. But Bono, and I don't know who the hell he was with, came in and said he was on at 12. And I said, no, I'm on till 12:30. And we had this argument. And you know, that's the only time I've ever met him. And he wasn't very famous in 1979. I'm not sure. So I'm just interested to know. I don't like Bono. I'm perfectly open about this. I know you two are questionably the biggest band on earth right now. I like Bob Geldof. I think Bob...
It sounds to me as if you just pronounced Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band a bit wrong there, Henry.
How do you mean?
Well, when you said about the biggest band in the world, I'm sure you should have Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band, but
well,
you know.
Well, I don't know. Is U2 the biggest band in the world?
I love U2, okay? I adore U2 as a band. I think in their pomp, when they had that fantastic run of albums through Acton Baby, Pop Mart, Joshua Tree, absolutely incredible stuff. They were a great live band as well. I remember going to see Pop Mart and also Acton Baby. Two fabulous, fabulous shows. And indeed, one of them I saw the night that Diana died. So that will always live in my memory.
Indeed.
The Edge did all kinds of everything because Diana was running for the presidency. And then the next night they did one for Diana because she died overnight. Mm. So, you know, you two will always be associated with me.
What's the problem with the lead singer?
Well, my problem with Bono is that he keeps really poor company. I mean, his phone book has people like Tony Blair, George W. Bush, Vladimir Putin. You know, he has hobnobbed with all these people over the years. Also, I will never forgive him for what he did to me in Dublin in 2016. When he got up at a Bruce Springsteen concert and destroyed Because of the Night. And I'll never forgive him for that alone. But also, you know, you have to say, I mean, I'm getting a bit peeved about the company that Bruce Springsteen's keeping at the moment. Mm. I mean, he's released a podcast and a book with Barack Obama. Barack's cool, but he was a great disappointment to me as a US president. He didn't do what he should have done, you know?
Okay.
Also, I was horrified to see Springsteen, footage of Springsteen on stage with Coldplay. Okay. Dear God, elevator music. What are you doing, Bruce? And then a few days later, he goes on stage with McCartney. And that was probably when they hatched the plan for Glastonbury.
I just want to get back to him because, you know, I think Bono is a tosser. And I don't say that easily, but I think he, you know, I think he was on the coattails of Bob in the 80s with Live Aid and all that sort of stuff. He was, you know, really, Bob is the real deal. I know Bob. I don't know Bob. I just happened to live in the same park as Bob. He lived in 18 Park Name West. I lived in 18 Park Name East. I can't say the name of the park in Dunleary. And I saw Bob around just, you know, in the mid-70s before they hit the big time with their punk rock stuff. But I have always found Bono to be a pain in the arse just watching him in the media. He just sounds like a tosser to me.
I've got some really, really bad news here because in the next few months, Bono is going to be everywhere.
Why?
Because he is about to release a book. Already they are leaking bits from it. Apparently he has a half-brother that he only found out in 2000.
Really?
And as I was wittily saying, you know, is his brother's name Nobbo? Bono and Nobbo. Bono, I would be on the same page as you as regards Bono. He does talk some awful drivel. Yes. And another thing that annoys me, you've heard the little spoof I did for a radio station with Bono. I was doing an appeal for Bono to be canonized.
Yes, I did.
To be the first.
I love that. That was beautiful. That was a great thing. That was so funny.
Well, that's where I am with Bono. And if you remember, I ripped the arse out of him in terms of, you know, he's too busy playing Jesus to the lepers in his head, and you know he.
Can you actually send that to me so I can air it in this a piece of it in the show?
I can find it, and you can run it, and I hope that the listeners really enjoy it because I'm very, very proud of it.
Okay. Well, look, I just want to let I just want to let our listeners know if you do get that audio to me, it will play right now.
Reviled by the right-wing non-liberal media, as the good book says, let he who is without sin cast that first stone, and we don't mean he cut costs by not paying Irish taxes. He prays to a $4 million Fabergé icon of St. Patrick every night for forgiveness. From Angel of Harlan to Zooropa, he's covered every human emotion as if channeled by a divine force to be a positive icon for these troubled times. Born in Dublin's Rotunda Hospital, he grew up on the mean streets of Glasnevin. Bettered himself, becoming first rock star, then humanitarian, to ease the suffering of millions around the globe, while still maintaining a handy tax haven in the Netherlands. He's a singing legend, an honorary knight of the British realm, Time Magazine's Man of the Year 2005. He's just plain better than us mere mortals, but he's just too busy playing Jesus to the lepers in his head. So do your part. Help to make him the first human being in history to be beatified while still alive. Text Beatify Bono now to Hallelujah 666 or donate online at www.beatifybono.vatican.va. Make Bono the one.
Just joined us. It's Henry for Bondi Tunes International in Sydney, Australia. I'm talking with Bob McKenzie, our Irish correspondent near Dublin in Ireland, in Bray, County Wicklow, in fact. Bob, I just want to switch subjects, and I realise I'm keeping you much longer than I told you. When I connected with you to do this interview, you had the television on in the background, And I said, was that RTE, which is the Irish National Broadcaster? And you said, no, it's the BBC. Why?
Ah, now, as you are well aware, I have been a broadcast journalist for 30 years.
Yes.
In various genres as well, as you know, because I'm actually a sports journalist by trade.
Yes.
But I've also, you know, dabbled in music, movie reviews, you know, culture, you know, current affairs, anything you like, really. But I have always had this trust and this love for the BBC, no matter how, you know, others perceive them. I've always felt that they are the most trusted news source in the world.
Me too.
And I'll tell you why I think that, because I'm a great believer in the charter of the BBC and what Lord Rees set the BBC up to do, which was to inform without bias. And I think that on the whole, the BBC do that so much better than anybody else.
I agree.
That they do when there's something big like we're having at the moment with this awful, awful situation in Ukraine, which, you know, is just heartbreaking. And and you know, if the rumors are true about Vladimir Putin, he can't die quick enough, as far as I'm concerned. But the BBC have had the likes of Jeremy Bowen out there, Fergal Keane, who of course you would be well aware of.
Yes.
One of the great Irish journalists, did a very
great,
good document about his PTSD from all the years of covering disasters,
and also Orla Guerin has been working for BBC World for
Orla's out there as well. I mean, Orla is one of those. She's like Kate Ady used to be for the BBC. If Kate Ady turned up, you knew you were in trouble.
Yes.
And Orla's one of those girls, you know.
She's tough.
She's such a brilliant, empathic reporter.
Yes.
So is Fergal. Fergal tells a story, and he has one of those voices that you could just listen to forever. Fergal, he has a great voice. And Jeremy Bowen, who for many years was the BBC's Middle East correspondent, and he did such a good job as Middle East correspondent reporting on what was going on that he was banned from every country in the Middle East.
Oh, really?
that's some going. But Jeremy has been reporting from Ukraine and has produced some of the most heartbreaking television I think I've seen from a war zone. And I think that the way that the BBC report the big events, they report it better than anybody else. And they do it with a fairness, I think, that a lot of other stations don't, because they're running their own agendas. For instance, now, in the UK at the moment, we have rail strikes going on. And there's a guy who's in charge of the union for the rail workers, who has become a media star in the last week, because he has basically been handing interviewers' asses back to them. Because every time they interview him, he does them. But he was on with Piers Morgan. You will love this. This is one of the most brilliant trolls of all time, right? This guy is called Mick Lynch. Yes, he's a first-generation Irish lad brought up in England, right? Mm.
Yes.
So he has our bolshiness, right?
Yes.
So he goes on with Piers Morgan, and Piers Morgan takes him to task because his profile picture, do you remember Thunderbirds?
Yes.
The puppet show from the late 60s,
yes,
early 70s.
Yes, I do.
And the villain in it was called The Hood, and he was this bald fella. And Mick Lynch has The Hood as his profile picture because he looks like The Hood, because he's bald.
Right.
So here's Morgan, gobshite that he is.
Yes.
Has him on this TV channel that nobody is watching, by the way.
What is that TV channel?
This is one of Murdoch's ones where he's just basically...
Oh, is that like...
His friends.
UK Talk News? What's it called?
Talk TV.
You know, I just want to mention that one of our own correspondents, Rachel Brunson, who is our entertainment reporter, actually broadcasts on Talk TV, albeit at 3 a.m. In local time in the UK. So she's actually a regular presenter on there. Well, she's an interviewee for Australian politics. But anyway, please do go ahead,
anyway, Bob. So Piers Morgan's on, right? And he takes Mick Lynch to task over the fact that he has The Hood as his profile picture. But the way he does it is ridiculous. He says, you have the hood here from Thunderbirds as your profile picture. Wasn't he a terrorist in the show? Now, bear in mind, right? Bear in mind, this is a puppet show, okay?
Yes, yes.
Then Morgan says, could you not put something more wholesome as your profile picture?
Mm.
Mick Lynch comes off air and changes his profile picture. And do you know what he replaces the picture of the hood with?
Oh, please do tell.
A picture of Piers Morgan with Ghislaine Maxwell.
So he photoshopped a picture of... Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful.
He didn't have to Photoshop it at all.
Do they
have
a picture?
It's an actual picture of Piers Morgan with Ghislaine Maxwell.
Really? From what time?
Yeah. Oh, from about 10 years ago.
Jesus. Oh, that must Morgan have pissed him off.
Morgan started out as the first ever editor of the Bizarre column in The Sun. And he has taken Murdoch's money virtually non-stop ever since.
Yes.
He also took Maxwell's money when he was editor of the Daily Mirror.
And you've got to remember he was on CNN at one point.
Yeah.
And they shafted him because he was just useless. I mean, he just didn't do the job.
How he managed it, I don't know, because he actually took Larry King's slot, if you remember.
He did, I know.
Yeah, and I mean, Larry King is one of the all-time greats, as you and I both know.
Mm.
Larry King, you know, you could not dance around Larry King, let's be fair.
He was brilliant.
Only probably the great Robin Day was in Larry King's class when he got the bit between his teeth, in fairness. I mean, you remember Robin Day from the BBC.
Of course I do, yes, very well.
And I mean, he was just incredible. I mean, there's so few now really good broadcasters who can talk about what's going on in the world and do it correctly. There's a guy called James O'Brien who works for LBC, and he's really good. You should check him out, Henry. He's also written a couple of really interesting books that really are very, very good. But he's a really good presenter. But he consistently he has a call-in show on LBC.
Hmm.
And LBC is now a national station in the
yes,
UK.
Yes, it used to be just London when I lived in.
LBC, very, very clever. Their logo now is LBC, Leading Britain's Conversation.
Ah, very good, because it used to be the London Broadcasting Company, I presume.
Yeah, but O'Brien is the guy who, when the idiots phone in, he will school them.
Hmm.
But do it in such a way that they look like idiots, but he doesn't look like he's talking down to them.
Yes, it's very smart, isn't it?
It's a very interesting balance. He is, like, if I was in charge of the BBC, if I was the news editor in the BBC, I would do everything I could to get him back. And I'd put him on Question Time as the host of Question Time.
Yes.
Because he would absolutely do a fabulous job there. But his radio show is really good. Check him out, James O'Brien. He's English, but obviously with a name like that, he has the Irish in.
Indeed.
But he's actually interesting enough. He's an Ampleforth boy. You know the Catholic prep school in Yorkshire that Cardinal Basil Hume used to be headmaster of?
Right.
So he's a proper sort of like, you know, middle-class Catholic boy. do you know what I mean? So
yeah, sure.
He's a very interesting broadcaster, though. You should check him out.
I just want to, just before we go, we've got to go soon. Jeez, we're going up to an hour here, Bob, which is good. I just want to ask you about the Irish National Broadcaster, RTE, because when I contacted you before we went on air, we talked about you were watching the BBC, and I mentioned RTE, and I'm just wondering, because I actually worked for Radio 2, it was called at the time, it's now called 2FM, for 5 minutes, I think, and went back to Nova, which was a commercial radio station, also a pirate radio station. Is RTE like a player? Because, you know, even back in the 80s, we had a thing called Pipe TV in Ireland, and we could watch BBC One, BBC Two, ITV. Channel 4 didn't exist, and neither did the digital stations. Do you think RTE are keeping up? Because the whole media is so splintered now, and people doing podcasts, YouTube, everything else. Is RTE worth the money, and do you have to pay a licence fee still?
Oh, God, yes, 160 quid a year.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and you have to pay it by law, even if you don't watch RTE. I mean, I would watch RTE Sport a lot more than I would watch RTE News.
Right.
Because obviously, you know, that's my background. But I mean, I had as brief a career with RTE as you did, Henry.
Really?
I was many, many years. I was a veteran by the time I got onto RTE. And I got the big build-up from the presenter in the studio and everything. You know, after so many years on the sidelines, he's finally on Friday Night Football. Let's go over to Bray. Here's Bob McKenzie. And then about 3 weeks later, they canned the show. So, you know, well
that's
done, Bob.
That's so unfair. It just seems so unfair.
Yeah. But what I will say is that I think that we are living in an age where information has never been more readily available, but people are too lazy to go looking for it. The ignorance of some of the younger people today.
Well, look, the millennials and Y-gens, the problem, Bob McKenzie, is that they don't have it. Look, I don't want to sound like an old man. And by the way, by the time we go to air on Saturday around Europe, July 2nd, I will have turned 60. But I don't want to sound like an old man when I say this stuff. But the problem with the Y-gen and the millennials is that they don't have any attention span.
Yeah. And that's to do with the fact that, you know, they've always had flickering screens over the years with the phone computers. I mean, one little thread that really resonated with me was recently Kanye West. I take it you've heard of this man, Kanye.
Sadly, I have. Yes.
Apparently, he is a rapper.
Yes.
Apparently.
Apparently. Yes.
And he was also married to one of these Kardashian people.
Oh God.
Now the Kardashians are a reality TV family. The head of which is actually a former Olympic gold medalist who transgendered.
Yes.
So, you know, right there you've got a reality TV show before you even bring the kids into it.
Yes.
But basically all the Kardashian women, big boobs, big arses, and
with the big arses? I mean, this is disgusting.
Anyway. This Kanye fella, right?
Yes.
I could name you one of his tunes, and I you know what? I couldn't be asked, you know?
But yes. Anyway,
the Kanye lad, right, released a track there about 6 months ago that featured Paul McCartney.
Mm-hmm.
The Kanye West fans genuinely tweeted such things as, "I think it's great that Kanye has given an unknown artist the chance to get music out there."
You're kidding me.
No. And then, who's this Paul McCartney? He's going to have a great career now. Kanye's helped him out.
Oh,
and I'm there like, lads, this is one half of the greatest pop songwriting duo of all time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Bob, we have to finish this. I just want to mention your book club. Tell us about your book club on Facebook.
Yeah, I have a book club on Facebook called Book Punk. So we just put that in the search bar and apply to join. It's we've got about 1,000 members and mainly female, funnily enough, because of course women read a lot more than men, and more's the pity. And basically what we do is, you know, we post what books we're reading, we post interesting articles about books, but of course I also throw in music, I also throw in art. For instance, now a lot of my members have been introduced to people like John Cooper Clarke, who of course you would be aware of, a punk poet from Manchester who has had a very, very long career and has had a bit of a resurgence because he had a book out last year. So, you know, it's a great place for finding writers, I've found, and I've had so many great recommendations from my own members of really, really good books to read. I've read some fantastic books because of recommendations just from people that are in Book Punk. So, you know, it's really, really good because it keeps me reading and it keeps giving me suggestions for new things to read.
That's fantastic. Okay, Bob McKenzie in Bray, County Wicklow, near Dublin. Thank you for joining me here on Bondi Tunes.
And Sauncher, and happy birthday to you on Saturday.
Thank you so much. This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
Henry O'Donovan.